Welcome to the Mentor Files. I'm your host, Monica Royer, founder and CEO of Monica and Andy. Join me as I chat with some of the world's leading entrepreneurs, inspiring CEOs, and experts at the top of their field to bring you the audible MBA, unfiltered advice, and mentorship every mover and maker needs to find their voice and success. Here we go. Our guest today is a designer, philanthropist, mom, former model, and entrepreneur. As the founder and CEO of Feed Projects, Lauren Bush Lauren is tackling the world's hunger crisis one bag at a time. Feed was founded in 2007 and to date has given over 100 million meals to kids around the world and in the U.S. For her work with Feed, Lauren has been named one of Fortune's most powerful women entrepreneurs, Inc.'s 30 Under 30, and received the Stevie Award for Best Nonprofit Executive. Lauren is a part of not one, but two iconic families. She's the granddaughter to the late former President George H.W. Bush and niece to former President George Bush, and is also daughter-in-law to Ralph Lauren. Today, Lauren and I discuss what she learned from our upbringing that helped shape her into a successful entrepreneur. Lauren also explains where the inspiration from Feed started and the lessons she learned from her upbringing that helped pave the way for her success. Plus, make sure to listen closely as Lauren reveals a special Feed discount for our Mentor Files listeners. Welcome, Lauren Bush Lauren, the CEO and founder of Feed Projects. Lauren, welcome.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Oh my gosh, I'm so excited to finally get a chance to catch up and learn a little bit more. So I feel like, I mean, there's a lot of familiarity around Feed Projects. I feel like you've been doing it for a little while, but for people that may not be familiar, can you tell us a little bit about it?
Sure. So I started Feed almost 13 years ago, hard to believe, with the mission to create good products that help feed the world. So that's still our mission. And really, for me, it was a very kind of personal journey, starting when I was even a student in college. I traveled with the UN World Food Program, like during holidays, spring break, you know, summer vacations. And through that experience, just saw, you know, upfront, firsthand, the realities of poverty and hunger. So, you know, roughly 1 in 9 people globally are food insecure, which literally means they don't know where the next meal is coming from. So through the World Food Program, I was able to travel to like Guatemala, Kenya, Lesotho, Tanzania, Cambodia, Sri Lanka, on and on while I was still in college, which was obviously just the neatest, you know, life broadening experience I could have asked for. And through that, really came back very inspired to do something. And what I also really was doing and thinking about for like, you know, post-college life career was design and fashion and, you know, moving to New York City and learning the trade. And Feed really came out of that, I guess, kind of frustration I had in trying to decide between what I thought were two very different life paths. One in which, yeah, I could be a designer, maybe an entrepreneur, but essentially creating, you know, things and products that hopefully people would want to buy. Uh-huh. Secondly, that of kind of a humanitarian aid worker and really, you know, contemplated even moving to Africa or somewhere and helping on the ground delivering food. And I had the aha moment for the Feed bag when I was, a junior in college, just as a very simple, easy way to allow others to engage in what is otherwise obviously a very massive and almost abstract and overwhelming issue of world hunger.
And Lauren, from the time that you kind of started thinking about Feed Projects to your ability to launch it, tell me a little bit about that. I feel like for people listening, you know, that have an idea, yeah, some ideas are faster, some ideas are slower. What was it like after you decided that that was what you were going to do to actually being able to do it?
Yeah, for me, it took about 2 and a bit years from idea, sort of aha moment feedback, to prototyping, figuring out supply chain, distribution, to then launching. And our very first retail partner was actually Amazon, when Amazon was like pretty much a bookseller and growing quickly, but certainly not what they are today.
Yeah.
And at the time, Amazon built like a little boutique page for the Feed bag and really told the story about Feed and video. So, you know, pre-Shopify and these sort of easy e-com solutions that we have now, pre-Instagram, which is still very old. We sold through Amazon. It's kind of this easy, quick way for people to get out there. But yeah, that time in between was about 2.5 years, of which I would say 1.5 years I was still in college, but already working with different kind of folks and contacts I had made in New York to learn how to design and prototype a bag, where to manufacture it. So already starting to put the pieces. So I graduated from college in 2006 with my first bag prototype. And then from there, it took about 6-7 more months of hustling and, you know, figuring it out to have established the Amazon relationship and get that initial order.
Yeah. And thinking about, Lauren, kind of the way that you did it, I feel like in some ways it's sort of two businesses in one that you had to put together in that time frame, because one of them was obviously like actually manufacturing, designing, and bringing the bag to production. And then, I mean, not that that can be incredibly complicated in itself, like even manufacturing one product to sell it brings a lot of its own trials and tribulations to the table. But secondarily, the more complex component of all of it, I'm sure, is the philanthropic side of what you put together. So which was harder to do? Was it harder to actually get the product manufactured, or was it harder to figure out how you were going to deploy the money for all the meals?
I guess for me, it started first and foremost, honestly, with the Give Back partner. So I was, again, in traveling for a few years prior to that with the UN World Food Program and seeing their operations firsthand, and primarily really falling in love with their school feeding program, which is still our primary kind of giving partner and beneficiary today. So it's getting kids literally in the poorest countries and regions around the world access to a free and nutritious school meal. So that was the program I started Feed to support. So I backed out a business to support the philanthropy that I saw working on the ground, if that makes sense. So Feed is not sort of the nonprofit or the, you know, government UN agency on the ground giving the meals.
Sure.
We are working through partners on the ground and in the US. No Kid Hungry is our US giving partner to help deploy those school meals because they have the infrastructure, they have the know-how. So from the get-go, I knew philanthropically I wasn't going to kind of go out and build food distribution,
sure,
essentially network and organization. So really set out to build Feed as a brand to support those programs in the field. So we work very closely with our giving partners, but we're certainly not in the weeds of what they are programmatically of how to, you know, get food to those in need. So I would say the more complex part for me was, okay, there's this great charity, you know, great UN organization, this great amazing school feeding program that's like literally changing kids' lives and getting them not only fed, but an opportunity to be educated and stay in school longer, and girls' education, you know, goes way up with school feeding. So all these amazing results with school feeding, how can I build something that will support that? Not just from a fundraising perspective, honestly, which is a huge part of what we do, but also just from an awareness raising, empowering perspective. Because I found that frustration I spoke of in those early years kind of came from like going on these trips, meeting these families, these communities, children, wanting so desperately to help, coming back to America and like walking into a grocery store, feeling overwhelmed, feeling very lucky, and then talking to my fellow, you know, friends and peers who want to do something but don't quite know how to where to begin when it comes to hunger specifically. It does feel, again, so massive and overwhelming. So creating Feed to be that entry kind of point, that conduit for people to get involved in the issue.
And Lauren, what did your team look like in the early days when you first launched? And tell us a little bit about the evolution to today.
Yeah, so many learnings on that front. when I started early, actually, I had a business partner who was actually at the UN at the time. And then once Feed kind of got going, she quit her day job and joined Feed full time. So for many years, it was the two of us, and then we would slowly add like one or two or three folks, one of whom actually I've worked with for over 10 years, who's still with me, Christina, who's wonderful and heads all of our operations. So we've had, just a very I would say, tight team. We're now a much bigger team, thankfully, with like departments and, you know, a reporting structure. We have a bit more of that structure, but really early days, it was, yeah, very lean. We all had titles, but it was a little vague, I would say. And, you know, job descriptions always bled over, you know, kind of have to be a master of all trades and jump in where needed. So I'm really glad I had that experience because I've, in essence, touched and been responsible for every part of what we do, which I think as a leader is now helpful because I kind of, I'm not an expert the way now the team is in the different areas we need, but I can at least have a base understanding of what everyone does because of those kind of early scrappy years.
Absolutely. And tell me a little bit about the little girl, Lauren. I love asking this about with entrepreneurs and everybody's answers are always different. I mean, it sounds like from what you said, you know, by high school and college, you definitely had a passion for both design as well as the more humanitarian side of things. But if we went back to like, you know, the 5 to 10-year-old, was there anything telling about what you were like at that stage or experiences that you had at that time that really led you to where you are today?
For sure. And it's so funny. I mean, hindsight's always 20/20. Looking back on what I just gravitated towards as a kid, it very much is in line with what I'm doing now, which obviously feels good. You know, when I was little, I was always, first of all, I was always setting up like play pretend stores, but literally selling things to people. Like I would be jewelry in the summer in Maine. We would spend a lot of the summer in Maine with my grandparents and I would go bead, 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 and then sell it to the tourists at this like little lookout spot or lemonade stands constantly. Always sort of organizing like neighborhood kids or my siblings. I'm an oldest kid, so a little type A perhaps. So organizing, you know, a group of kids, younger kids to be my like sales force. And yeah, always really enjoyed that kind of, I guess, selling things to people for lack of better words, but creating that kind of retail experience. And then also on the give back front, just feel, again, kind of lucky and blessed that at a young age, I don't know, public service was just a theme of my family, obviously being in politics. But beyond that, just kind of grew up with the not expectation, that's kind of the wrong word, but just this understanding that like what you do in life is help others to some extent. My mom, when I was little, had a charity that helped homeless and abused children. So grew up watching her, you know, lead that organization for a few years, start it, and then going, you know, with her, with my dad to volunteer locally in Houston, where I grew up. So again, feel lucky I kind of grew up with that ethos also. So yeah, looking back now, it kind of makes total sense why I would want to do something like Seed that combines both the design and the retail with a strong give back component.
And I mean, I think it's exciting hearing you talk about your childhood. It sounds like there was always a CEO in you and certainly like a brand
or a boss
CEO.
Or sister. Yeah.
Yes. I'm also, I mean, I only have one brother whom I know, you know, and I am the older of the two of us too. So there is something about the older sibling mentality that's always ready to kind of take over and tell everybody what to
give
do.
Direction.
Yes. And totally. I certainly have that as well. Tell me a little bit, obviously being a founding CEO, as you and I know, it's a privileged role. So certainly we're fortunate to have it, but it isn't necessarily an easy job at the end of the day. And sometimes the things that you have to do as a founding CEO are counterintuitive to the things that you want to do as a human being. So tell us a little bit about like the evolution to founding CEO from you beyond, you know, the humanitarian side of what you're doing and the design side of what you're doing, but actually managing the team. What do you feel have been some of the biggest challenges for you?
Oh gosh, that's a really good question. I'd say it's a role I am still every day learning and growing into.
Yes.
Yeah. And being a founder and having a vision is different than leading a team and, you know, hitting performance metrics and all that good stuff. And it's balancing almost head and heart in a way that can at times be, you know, in direct odds. I think ultimately for me, my guiding light is like, well, what's best for Feed? What's best for our brand, our mission, and our business? And when something kind of checks all three of those boxes, that's clearly the right decision or the right way forward. And if one of those things is a bit at odds, then it's obviously the debate. And I definitely am a collaborative leader, so I do lean heavily on my team. I have a really great president also who's, you know, right hand, and Christina, who I mentioned, who has our operations. So, and just a great leadership team. So I really, you know, lean heavily on them, but ultimately, you know, decisions fall to me. So yeah, I think it really can be challenging, but as long as I find when I have those darker days or harder decisions to make, when the guiding light is really what is going to make Feed brand, business, and mission the, you know, biggest and best it can be, that's where decisions become much clearer.
I totally agree. I feel like in my previous life, you know, my job was really to get people to like me, which, as you know, is very different from this, from this job.
Yeah.
And so, you know, I tended to be more, and still do, on the ruinous empathy side of things, where I just like, my heart leads so much of things. And like you said, I think as a founding CEO, to your point, you're making decisions for everybody. You're making decisions for your customer and for your fiduciaries and for your team, and whatever aligns with what works for everybody isn't necessarily what works for a single group of those. And that's so the hardest part of things too, is that there's so many fun things to do and so many fun decisions to make, but along with those fun decisions come lots of other not fun decisions at the end of the day. And you know what, I think you made another really good point there too, Lauren, for people that are listening, which is the things that you like that you start out to do as you're founding a company. It's interesting to ascend in the CEO role throughout the years, and you've certainly been doing it for like a, you know, a considerable amount of time, and I would say are one of the most seasoned people that I've had on the podcast, and certainly in terms of like the length of tenure, because, you know, so many other startups, like my brother too, launching in 07, like that, you know, that was like one of the earlier days of like some of these brands that have grown online. And I think that who you start off being in the early days, like very few people are still going to be, they'll always be the founder, but maybe not the CEO a decade or more later, because the job evolves so much. And so what do you think are some of the things that you've obviously grown in the role. You found success in early days, which is totally different than the job you're doing today. Like, do you think there are any particular reasons that that became the case, or 1 year has just like flown more seamlessly to the next for you?
That's really interesting. I think it's persistence. Yeah, I love in waking up every day and still being in it to win it in a way. But I think at some point, which I totally understand and may happen to me at some point too.
Yep.
You kind of wake up and say, I can't keep doing this. For me, it is just continue to evolve. So as, just a human waking up and going to work every day, I feel like even though I've had the same title, quote unquote, for a long time, my role within that has just with Feed and with our kind of different life stages has continued to evolve so much. It's kept me learning and challenged and really engaged, which is important as, you know, someone who wants to continue to better myself and learn. So I think that's huge. And it's not to say I'll be the CEO forever. Like, again, it's whatever is best for Feed.
Yep.
And if at some point I really feel that, okay, I feel like this, you know, another person with this specific set of expertise is most needed now to lead, then that's, it's whatever is best for Feed. That's always been my, again, guiding light. But I do feel very, very lucky to have, just a really good kind of seasoned team around me, some of which have grown up at Feed, others of which we've, you know, been able to hire in the last 5 years. And that's just made all the difference.
Yeah. And Lauren, tell us a little bit about the structure. Mm-hmm. Like, I understand your team is all women, which is incredible. Mm-hmm. Amazing. Tell us a little bit, about the structure of your team.
Yeah, we are all women. We haven't always been. So we're open to hiring men. It just seems that the best candidates for the current roles have been women.
Sure.
Which leads, again, we're a very collaborative environment. We make primarily, you know, women's accessories, like a lot of reasons why I think women have just gravitated towards wanting to work at Feed. And we're, you know, we're still a fairly lean and mean team. We're super collaborative. We definitely have little departments now and team leads and a structure. Again, I hired my president, Sarah Messier, who came to Feed about 2.5 years ago. She's been a wonderful, more day-to-day lead, and that really has freed me up to do what I do best for the brand, which is more on the design, branding, partnership front, but still involved very heavily in other, and across all departments and pieces of the business. But that hiring her specifically has been a huge, I'd say, game changer in terms of my day-to-day role. So yeah, that is the team. It's, you know, product, obviously marketing, merchandising, creative, meaning digital and in-store. We have a whole store team as well now. We have our first store in Brooklyn in Dumbo. Come visit us, 55 Water Street.
I love
and
that. It's a congratulations.
Coffee shop as well. Yeah, it's a store and a coffee shop. So wanted to make it not just a retail store, which it certainly is, but it's also a place to come and really experience the brand. We do fair trade coffee. La Colombe is our partner. We have some, you know, light bites, and then obviously sell our Feed assortment. But we also do a ton of programming there. So a lot of talks very much related to you know, causes we care about, people we care about. We have like a Women on a Mission series, panel talks about once every, you know, few months. We do kitty community music classes. Anyway, it's just a really fun to have that physical expression beyond the digital too.
No, I think that's so much fun. Well, that was one of our biggest learnings. So we really launched the brand sort of omni-channel in July of 2014. And I remember talking to my brother and he's like, hey, Monica, if I did this again, I would definitely have my office in the back of my guide shop. So he was like, that's, you should see your customers every day and talk to them. But because I was a pretty new mom at the time, I felt like there was such a lack of community. So I was like, I don't really want a quiet storefront where like, cause you know, we've got people with babies that are coming. Like they're, I remember being like afraid to leave the house. Like, oh my gosh, where am I going to change her diaper? How am I going to feed her? I was like terrified in that first 9 months. And so we definitely wanted that like cookie crumb, breastfeeding, diaper changing environment. And I do think I love, and I can't wait to visit your store. I'm like obsessed with La Colombe. I feel like that's our whole office outside. Yeah. So we go there all the time, but I think that's such a smart way to do physical retail because it just gives people like a reason to come in and do something where they're not just looking at what you're selling to. And for us, I feel like that it's created a more comfortable environment. Do you see yourself, Lauren, sort of expanding on physical retail? I know it can be, you know, time to have a store and then really think about like, okay, does it mean, should I go further with this? But do you guys see an opportunity for more physical locations?
Expansion. I do. I really do. Yeah. I'd say we're still, you know, working through some of the kinks and optimizing, but the store has been amazing from a brand and a business perspective. So I definitely think more stores are to come for sure.
And you mentioned partnerships as like one of the, you know, key things that you and your team have been working on. What are some of the lessons you've learned from the partnerships that you've done over the years?
I know, really. So when I set out to do Feed beyond that first Amazon, which I considered kind of a partner at the time, but basically with our wholesale partner, retailer, most of the first, I'd say 7-8 years of Feed, I was pretty much solely focused on partnerships. We've always had our own D2C website, but that was really secondary in focus, for better or for worse. The big focus was in working with, you know, we've worked with The Gap and Pottery Barn and Williams-Sonoma, West Elm, Target, you know, you name it. We've done, whether it was like a one and done, in and out, more kind of marketing partnerships and or longer term partnerships. Clarins, for example, we have worked with, I think about 9 years now. They've been a huge partner of ours globally. So we've activated with each partner differently. And I'd say, yeah, many lessons learned. On one hand, it was like an amazing way to get the brand established and out there because on the backs of partners and their distribution and their marketing budgets, we are able to kind of build the Feed brand. Early days when I didn't, you know, I didn't start Feed by raising a ton of capital and kind of having digital marketing from the get-go and all that good stuff that we now do, it really was on strategic partnerships. And that, you know, again, helped grow the brand. So I would say the pivot now with partnerships is we definitely do them. Obviously, it has to be the right kind of brand with the right values really aligned with Feed, not just a matter of, oh, how many products feedback that they sell. For us, you know, it has to be a meeting of values as well. And someone who's really going to communicate feed in the right way, because there's a lot more storytelling, I would say, with our bag versus another, you know, brand's bag or product. So that's very important to us. And, you know, given we are very focused on growing our own channels, partnerships are very important to us, but almost secondary. Where again, for feed, it used to be more primary, just in terms of like revenue stream and everything.
Sure.
So I would say, yeah, learning is just, it's evolved with the kind of priorities and feed. And ultimately, you know, we want to be in a place where we can really control the narrative. We can talk directly to our customers. We know who they are. And so that, I would say, has led us to just be more picky with who we partner and how many partnerships we do. I think it was like 2010, we did 12 different partnerships. And my team was like, whoa.
Wow. Yeah.
Yeah. You know, because that requires a lot of management and a lot of handholding. And there's so many different structures and ways to do partnerships. So I would say, as grateful as I am for our partnerships, and again, we still continue to work with a select few each year, I would say the bulk of our energy and time really goes into having that direct relationship with our customer now.
Yeah, and I think you made a great point too for people that are listening, Lauren, and that is that if you build a website, it doesn't mean that people are going to come. So what are you going to do in order to drive traffic and eyeballs to the brand?
Yeah.
And I think that's one of the sort of dirtiest little secrets of digitally native vertical brands is people think they have an idea and a product and they put all this effort into putting together a website. And for people that are listening, I feel like, Lauren, you and I are here to say that like that is not going to make anybody come to your website necessarily. And it sounds like you really optimize and capitalize on the idea of partnerships in order to get the brand out in the early days. And now it sounds like, based on what you're saying, like the dynamic of those partnerships is shifting. And I think you made another great point too, which is like, you don't need to, in the early days, like the quantity of what you do is so important. Like in the early days, like people would call us and like anything that they suggested, like we could partner on this, we could pop ourselves up here. Like we said yes to absolutely everything.
Yeah.
I would say for what the first like couple of years. And then you get to this point where you're still doing that, but then you got to start to ask yourself, all right, like what's my return on investment? It's not just about the quantity of what we're doing. It starts to become about the quality. But if people are out there listening and you're starting to think about launching a brand, like quantity is certainly everything in those first couple of years. And then it starts shifting to quality. So I guess.
You learn kind of what works and what doesn't, to your point. Like before you kind of get out there and try a few things, you don't even know what to ask for necessarily. And then you get a few under your belt and you can go to then future partners and say, okay, here's what we've done in the past. Here's what we don't want to do again. Here's how we, you know, just with more authority and just historical knowledge. And I do think to your point, it was maybe a blessing in disguise of starting in a day pre-Shopify before it was really easy to just throw up your own website and fulfill orders online. And sort of almost out of necessity, partnerships were the way to get product out there. But in essence too, it helped really because of our give back too. You know, companies and brands at a time when conscious consumerism was certainly on the rise, they didn't know how to engage their own customer base. And feed presented itself as we are with this sort of ready-made, very authentic, very, you know, genuine way to give back and to engage in conscious consumerism. So we, you know, we're, I would say, right time, right place in many ways too, early days to do just a ton of different partnerships. And again, we love partners. We really love when it's done right. And, you know, nothing is better than kind of expanding quickly via a great partnership, whether that's awareness or revenue, et cetera, both hopefully. But at the same time, to have that direct relationship with your customer is just so important nowadays, given the tools, given social media, just given the way retail has evolved over the last decade.
Definitely. And Lauren, for people that are listening, what would your, like, they're just getting started, what would your advice be on like how to even approach those early days of partnerships?
I know it's more of an art than a science. I think it really is just thinking, you know, knowing your brand, knowing your product really well, and then thinking, gosh, what are like adjacencies or like brands that aren't doing exactly what you're doing, because why would they even partner with you? But so for me, a really clear example, I grew up in Texas. Whole Foods was founded in Austin, Texas. Always grew up, you know, really admiring Whole Foods. And early days, before I even had a bag prototype, I actually went to the Whole Foods headquarters in Austin, like cold knocked on their door, got a meeting and presented my idea. And they said, okay, that's interesting. This is when they still had plastic bags, believe it or not. And they said, you know, actually our foundation's really focused on obesity now we're going to do hunger. To which I was like, no, don't. I'm not asking like philanthropically for you to change your company mission. I'm just asking for you to work with us.
Sure.
You know, we're going to make a bag. And I think that's another good thing to note. It's, you really need something to show someone. So I was able to then, kind of a longer story than I would like, but I'll keep going. I was at Princeton undergrad, by this point was my senior year. I had finally my bag prototype. Like final, loved it. And John Mackey, the CEO of Whole Foods at the time, came and spoke, the founder and CEO, came and spoke at Princeton. And I went to his talk. I kind of finagled an invite to this dinner he did with a select amount of students after, obviously with my bag prototype, went to him and said, hey, you know, hi, I'm Lauren. I have this idea for a feed bag. It will feed, each bag sold will feed one kid in school for 1 year. Here's roughly the pricing. Like I literally envisioned this product to be at Whole Foods when I dreamed it up. You know, who can I talk to?
Yep.
And he directed me to someone who directed me to someone, you know, and they're very nice, but kind of got the brush off. So I was like, gosh, two strikes. But I still believe that Whole Foods is the right ultimate, you know, great retail partner for feed, given we're trying to feed hungry kids and you're feeding your family, you're paying a premium for really great, you know, produce and food. What a perfect moment in a consumer's journey to then buy a feed bag and give back. And that's when basically my partner at the time, her friend had a friend who's like a, you know, gourmet food buyer in the Northeast region. So just not the CEO, not the founder, not his deputies, a lower level person who we then met with, who connected us to like a local marketing manager who became our like amazing internal champion. So long story short, that person helped us sell into all the 12 regions of Whole Foods. It's a regional kind of buying system. Literally went on like a roadshow to pitch in person each of these regions to get buy-in. And what ended up being this like great big national launch. And through that one singular partnership, which lasted about 2 years with this really specific kind of zip up tote, we're actually relaunching soon because it's been asked for time and time again, we were able to provide all the school feeding budget for Rwanda for a year. So essentially feed all the school children in WFP school feeding program for a whole year, just through the Whole Foods partnership.
Wow.
So it's just, A, it's persistence. B, it's just having that gut about, okay, this is my product. Here would be the ultimate, you know, partner or consumer kind of journey and experience and discovery of what you're trying to do. And then just, you know, be not harassing, but I would say somewhat relentless in getting to the right contact, which may be the CEO, maybe a higher level person. It may also be a more junior person who can better kind of work it through the system and have the headspace to help you and hear you out. So that'd be some of my advice.
Yeah. And I think that's such good advice too, for people that are listening. And I mean, really it's like, you just can't give up. And like you said, it's like, I'm certainly a fine line between not giving up and harassment, I'm sure. So to figuring out which side of that line to stay on is key. But, you know, ultimately you're going to get a ton of rejection, like so many people, whether it's capital partnerships, like you name it, you're going to have to knock on so many doors to get to where you're going. But it sounds like, you know, obviously you had such a deep belief in what you're doing. And I almost got like goosebumps when you said that about the kids of Rwanda, because I feel like the impact that what your persistence had on the outcome of what happened is pretty spectacular, you know, which is kind of incredible to think about, you know, like what you're going for and where your persistence can get. So I think that's just key for people that are listening. It's like, nobody's probably going to tell you yes the first time. who are all the different people that you can get to. People email us, or, you know, there's tons of cold outreach that that can result in something. And so it sounds like you just made the most of the time that you had in front of like the right people and just didn't give up. And that led to like a pretty incredible outcome. And it sounds like a huge jumping off point for you.
I mean, it really helped that partnership specifically really helped put feet on the map early days. Yeah. And to your point, like I could have, before I had the bag prototype, when I had this semi-defeating meeting at the headquarters in Austin, I could have said, okay, this idea won't work. And then after meeting John Mackey, I could have, before I launched the company, I could have said, okay, this isn't going to work. Like there were many clear moments when I said, okay, I could have walked away basically with feet in general, just because of this, like not quite getting through. But to your point, I'm so happy I didn't, and continue kind of stayed the course. And not everyone is going to embrace what you do or get it, you know, especially when you're setting out to do something a little different, which we were. I think one of the barriers for feet early days was that the idea of a business and a brand built around doing good for the world just wasn't a known idea at the time as much. I mean, the Red campaign was starting, Tom's was starting, like literally right at the same time we were. So it was bubbling up and consumers were wanting it. And yet retailers and stores and you know, potential partners always would direct us sometimes to like the CSR person. While lovely and amazing, that person or that department isn't going to be buying our product. They're not going to be marketing our product. They don't have the budget or the you know, the say essentially to form a great partnership with Beat in the way we wanted, because we're not a, you know, a straight nonprofit. So a lot for me too was just in educating, I would say, stores and retailers early on about the kind of unique model that Feed is. And now I'm really happy that, you know, Feed is not an anomaly. There's so many other great brands and companies. And in fact, it's almost table stakes now when you're starting to have, you know, be more sustainable or have a give back, or just be more thoughtful about, you know, your impact in what you're doing. So it's just cool. I think it's, you know, because of consumer demand, that's the way retail is, and the brands that are really breaking through have that added component to them for the most part. And just early days, a lot was kind of misunderstanding of who we are and what our model is, and then how basically they would essentially partner with us.
And tell us, Lauren, about the future of Feed. So like, what do you feel like is your next evolution, or what's on the horizon for you and your team?
Yeah, a lot of fun stuff. I feel like we're, even though over a decade in, really hitting our stride. I think our product is looking really good. We, you know, from what started with one bag and slowly was like two bags and three bags, and maybe by year four was almost only, you know, four bags. We now have a much more wide array of products with different end uses. So everything from a weekender to, you know, a backpack to a kid's lunchbox to our totes that we're most known for. So really proud with just how the line has evolved. But yeah, I just, there's so much more to be done with the cause of hunger and what we care about, getting school meals to kids. So with that, we launched to last year our own home line, which we're going to be kind of re-upping this year. So all artisan made, and it's home goods that all relate back to food. So relate back to our mission, which is really nice. So everything from a cutting board to aprons to napkin sets to mugs. So just a whole new product category for Feed, where I think Feed and our mission, our brand really makes sense. So just, continuing to think of how to expand in ways that are really strategic and ultimately growing not only the business, but growing our impact.
That's amazing, Lauren. I'm so excited that you joined me today. And for people that are listening, go to feedprojects.com. And if you want 15% off your purchase, you can use the promo code MENTOR. So Lauren, thank you so much to you and your team for offering that. And I look forward to continuing the conversation. I mean, it's been wonderful to have you. And I think there's a lot that people can take away from like a partnership perspective, especially, and just some of your story about the challenges that you faced. I think people will see that in themselves and hopefully be encouraged to continue based on your success.
Well, thank you. It's important conversations to have. It definitely, in starting Feed and still today, talking to other founders and hearing their journeys really helped me get through during tougher times. So thank you for doing your podcast.
I hope you enjoyed the episode. For more information and tips from our guests, stop by monicaandandy.com or check us out on Instagram at Monica and Andy. If there's someone you want to hear from or a topic you'd like us to cover, please leave us a comment on iTunes. Thanks for tuning in.